This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Andrew Sullivan is the editor of The New Republic. His blog is The Daily Dish, and his new book is The Conservative Soul, How We Lost It and How to Get It Back. Andrew joins us on the long line from his home in Washington. Andrew, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for making a little time for this. I know this is a big holiday tomorrow, and a lot of people sort of just peel off and disappear and spend time with their families, and I want to thank you for spending time with us.
Well, thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving, too.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Let me ask you first, The Conservative Soul, just give us the quick elevator speech first about this book. Basically, what is The Conservative Soul?
Well, it's really a response to what's happened in the Republican Party and President Bush, in which a lot of people who used to think of themselves as Republicans or conservatives look at the current administration and the previous Congress and say, what? Was that really what we were? Is that what we believe in? And the book is an attempt to think through from first principles what it means to actually be a conservative, what that can possibly mean in terms of basic principles of limited government, individual liberty, strong defense, all the things that it seems as if the Republican Party leadership has forgotten over the last 6 years of big spending, big borrowing, and incompetent war management.
Let me read you, and just have you respond to this, read you an excerpt from the Washington Post's Book World. The reviewer wrote that you, in this book, you calmly and rationally attempt to deduce the malady that in barely 15 years has rendered Reagan-era conservatism all but unrecognizable, and the pathogen that you identify is Christian fundamentalism. This book attempts to wake up Americans to the idea that the fundamentalists most dangerous to our future are not Islamic and foreign, but Christian and homegrown.
Well, that's, I think, an overstatement of the case. I think that we face a far bigger threat from Islamic fundamentalists, mainly because they deploy violence in advancing their own faith. Whereas at home, Christian fundamentalists are primarily, as I say in the book, peaceful, democratic people making their case. Nevertheless, that case has implications, and the notion that you know the truth about the world because you've had it revealed by God directly to you, and that this mandates that everybody in a country obeys the same laws according to your religious ideas, that is very alien to the idea of a small government and allowing people to decide how to live their own lives and use their own liberties the way they want. So that conflict between freedom and morality, which really is at the core of the Republican conflict right now, I think has to be deduced and traced back to the certainty and absolutism of some of the religious fundamentalists involved. I mean, it used to be that evangelicals and libertarians could be in the same party because we all agreed that what we wanted to agree on was the government would leave us alone. And now one wing, the social conservatives, decided the government's role is not to leave us alone, but to make us better people. And libertarians and people who believe in individual liberty are resisting and fighting back.
Andrew Sullivan is our guest. The book is The Conservative Soul. Didn't Reagan sort of flirt with the Christian fundamentalists in the 80s? And then 41, George Bush Sr. continued to sort of flirt, but not really embrace. But yet we've seen George Bush really embrace and seem to look for guidance almost from this.
Well, Reagan in the first Bush sort of flirted with, as you put it, the fundamentalist movement. George Bush II, George W. Bush, married them. And essentially that relationship, which was then integrated at the heart of the Republican Party and was integrated into their election campaigns too, appealing primarily on religious grounds to people rather than on neutral political grounds, that had an impact. And what happened in the last election is that that large group of sort of middle ground conservatives, Midwestern conservatives, also Rocky Mountain West conservatives, who really believe in keeping government in its place and individual liberty, they split and went back to the Democrats. And I think they did it because of the overweening influence of certain kind of Christian nanny staters among the fundamentalists. This is not an anti-Christian thing. It has nothing to do with whether one believes in Jesus or in God, or it's simply about the role one thinks government ought to play. I think the Christians should be, and I speak as one, should be interested primarily in saving their own souls, in saving our own souls, than in telling other people how to run their lives. And I think if more Christians led by example rather than regulation, they'd be more successful.
I would be remiss, of course, we're sitting here in Charlottesville, and I would be remiss not to mention Mr. Jefferson, of course, who created this metaphor of the wall of separation between church and state. And this was one of his great warnings. You must always keep the church at arm's length when it comes to governing.
Yes, and it's the other way around, too. The church is better off, it seems to me, keeping the government far away from it. That the great paradox in America is the first country, really, in the world to specifically separate church from state saw religion explode and thrive and grow in ways that has not happened in Western Europe, for example. So that it's also good for religion to be separated from government. And I'd like to restore that tradition and see it as something that's also relatively conservative within the notion of a small government that keeps out of the way of your own morals and your own values.
It sounds like something that most conservatives and the part of me that is very conservative, that really speaks to me. I mean, that to me, that's what government should be. Just stay out. It would seem like something that would really resonate with a lot of conservatives. And yet, if I hear you right, we have a breed of conservatives out there who they want a big, strong government to sort of tell the rest of America what to do.
They do, and they want a big, strong government to tell the rest of the world what to do as well. It goes hand in hand. If you can force people to live moral lives, you can also force them abroad to be democratic. Well, the truth is that human beings are not like that, and that conservatives of all people historically have understood that the importance and power of culture, of the complexity of human society, and about the difficulty of controlling other human beings, which is why conservatives always said, look, government should do a few things, but do them well. It seems to me that right now government is doing way too many things and doing them badly. I mean, this is a government that wanted a president who wanted to send a spacecraft to Mars, but couldn't actually organize a response to a hurricane. So we lost a major American city. Now, it seems to me that our government should be at least able to respond to natural disasters. I mean, that's something that's absolutely within its remit. And yet we have this huge bloated government, borrowing and spending like there's no tomorrow, unable to do the most basic thing.
Now, can the ineptitude in the response to Katrina be blamed on marrying the religious right, or is it something else?
No, I think that's just what's happened is that the religious right has allowed the Republican Party to increase the size of government, while Republicans in general are not that interested in government because they've always been relatively hostile to government power. And so it's created also a culture in Washington of cronyism and corruption. So you have incompetence, really, running government organizations. And you have like someone like Michael Brown at FEMA, for example. And you just don't have good, old-fashioned competence. I think that's also ideologues aren't actually very interested in the mechanics of government. They're interested in the ideas and values. So Bush was very good about saying the battle in Iraq is freedom versus tyranny. And we can all agree with him, but that doesn't make any no use unless you can actually make government work, unless you can actually make an occupation work, unless you can actually keep law and order in a country like Iraq. And we haven't been able to.
Because here in this free world, it's the government that controls the military.
Yeah.
So government better work pretty good if it's going to...
Well, the military itself has been a success story over the last 20 years since Vietnam, but it was Rumsfeld that refused to really send enough troops to do the job. So he gave the military an almost impossible task, I think, which is why they grew increasingly restive under his control and have finally been liberated from it.
Has anyone yet gone back, and you can tell me this, I would love to see the New Republic do this as a cover story, to go back and sit down and really give Shinseki his due. I mean, the man who right early on said, wait a minute, and they just chased him right out because of it.
Well, you know, when Abizade... only, I think, a week and a half ago, said, you know, Shinseki was right in front of the Senate. That was that was a pretty major concession. I mean, and frankly, I always envisaged as a supporter of the war that there would be large numbers of troops going over there. Because if you can't do something right, you shouldn't do it at all. And the idea we went to war just hoping that as soon as we got there, the entire country, which had been ruined by decades of dictatorship and sectarian hatred, would suddenly instantly become easy to govern and that we would have instant law and order without our having overwhelming force was crazy. It was unhinged. And we're living with the consequence of that. That is not really ideological. That's just simply common sense. What was ideological, it seems to me, is that once that became clear, why did the president and the defense secretary not adjust quickly? Because they became wedded to their own ideology and their own power, I think, and were unable to be realistic and humble enough to just adjust.
Andrew Sullivan is our guest. The book is The Conservative Soul, How We Lost It, How to Get It Back.
You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Poi Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
Andrew Sullivan, editor of The New Republic. His blog is The Daily Dish, and his new book is The Conservative Soul, How We Lost It, How to Get It Back. We're talking about the redemption of Shinseki, and it also makes me think of Christine Todd Whitman, My Party 2, MyParty2.com, who's been saying for years, wait a minute, where are you going? Where is my party going?
Yes, well, there are many more of us, too. I mean, even if you think of someone like William F. Buckley, Jr., who is hardly what one think of as a liberal, he invented modern American conservatism. He's actually said that the President Bush does not represent any coherent governing philosophy that he can see. I mean, look, government spending has increased by 40% in 5 years under Republican control of both the House, Senate, and presidency. That's the fastest rate of increase since FDR. It's faster than any Democratic Congress since FDR has achieved. So the question is, why is that conservative? Why is it conservative to spend so much money and to borrow so much money that we don't have? When Bush came into office in 2000, the debt the next generation has to pay off was $20 trillion. That's the amount the federal government had promised to pay out that it had no chance of receiving in tax revenues. By 2004, that number was $43 trillion because of the Medicare drug benefit. So where is this money coming from? Someone's going to have to pay for it at some point. And the truth is the next generation is going to be saddled with this debt. And I don't think it's a conservative view that you slough off your responsibilities to the next generation. That's what they've done.
Yeah, and one day China's going to come calling for it to get their bonds paid, you know, all
if
the
that
bonds
happens,
that they're buying.
You know, the dollar is extremely vulnerable. We are really out on a limb here, and I don't think people understand the extent to which this country has been leveraged under the last 5 or 6 years in terms of its long-term fiscal standing. Most of the markets just don't believe it can carry on this way, that someone somewhere will have to act as a grown-up and put our house, our fiscal house, in order. But the longer we put it off, the tougher it will be and the more wrenching an adjustment it will be. My view is that conservatives historically have been the ones to say, sorry, but you can't afford it. They've been the Grinches. And now they're just handing out goodies and pork barrel projects and new entitlements like there's no tomorrow, like they're Kennedy Democrats.
What's our prospects for 2007 with this new Congress?
I think it's a fascinating moment, but I have no idea where it's headed. I think that the president has the possibility of a deal with the Congress on immigration, but that deal, which essentially would be what the president wanted in the first place, is likely to deeply divide the Republican Party and unite the Democratic Party, actually, around the McCain-Kennedy proposals. Then you also have the question of ethics and how Congress polices itself. And if the Democrats are smart, they're going to actually, and it looks like they're going to do this, focus a lot on the issue of corruption and spending and pork barrel projects. And if they can prove to the middle ground that they're better stewards of our fiscal health and more responsible than and more ethical, then I think nonpartisan conservatives, I mean people in the middle, the people who voted Democrat last time, will keep voting Democratic. But again, if the Democrats let them down, if the Democrats return to their old ways, then we're really stuck. And people like me, who think of ourselves as sort of gold water conservatives, have to just pick between the lesser of two evils.
What did you think about the Allen Webb race here in Virginia? Could you make the case that Jim Webb might be shaping up to be a better classical conservative than even George Allen?
I'm not sure he is, because he seems to be a bit of an economic populist. He's not really that comfortable with free markets or even with free trade. But we'll see. I think he represented, also represented a certain kind of social conservatism in Virginia, though not as extreme as George Allen's. I think Webb is a fascinating and complicated political personality, and I think he's been changing and has changed over the last 20 years, and I wouldn't want to prejudge him. I certainly would have supported him last time, but mainly because of my disdain for Allen rather than my support for Webb.
Andrew Sullivan, editor of The New Republic. His blog is The Daily Dish. You can find that online. The book is The Conservative Soul, How We Lost It, How to Get It Back. Andrew, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Great time talking. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.